This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to the first of two episodes of Market Talk for the month of March. In this programme, we'll be wondering, why is core Eurozone inflation so stubbornly high? What could take credit spreads wider from current levels? Why is China's two sessions so significant this year? And just how might this week's US payroll data feed into US policymaker decisions? So hosting the call from a rather snowy UK is me, Frances Watson, and making sense of it all for us, and from a much warmer climate, Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, slightly envious, how are you?
I'm extremely well, thank you, Frances. It's lovely here, sunshine, it's warm. Stupidly, I've decided to come back to the UK this weekend to go to the Cheltenham Festival next week. So, you should probably avoid taking any of my forecasts for the future, because that just shows you how bad it can go.
I might have known you'd be back for the Cheltenham Festival. Who knew? Okay. So, look, GGs aside, there's lots going on, isn't there? Just as everyone thought we were soft landing, everything was under control, we've got evidence and increasing evidence of signs of sticky inflation, not just in the Eurozone, but US as well. I mean, just talk us through that, Ben, if you will.
Well, it was last year's conversation about inflation getting out of control, wasn't it? We spoke about it so many times. And then there was a period right at the end of last year, maybe the beginning of this year, when it looked as though inflation was on the way down, helped by energy prices collapsing. We're talking about cold weather in the UK now, but it's been a mild winter, hasn't it? So energy prices falling. But then the latest couple of prints of inflation has been higher than expected. The last one that we had last week was from Europe. It was core inflation this time around. It's actually as high as it's been all cycle. So it came in at 5.6%. So this is core inflation. So this is when you strip out things like food and energy. So it's the things that you've got to worry about, because it is stickier. It doesn't just come down as natural gas prices come down. And it's being driven by service sector inflation. It's probably, hospitality, going out for food, all that sort of stuff, which everyone is doing, isn't it? That's been sticky. And that tends to feed into things like wage negotiations. And in Europe, they're starting to come around again. We've seen lots of headlines of wages being struck at very high numbers, and that's the risk that it feeds. That's the risk, that circularity of high inflation leading to wage inflation, leading to even higher inflation that central banks are so petrified about. And that's why they're all getting another bout of hawkishness, of talking sort of quite aggressive about what they're going to do.
And talking of central banks, of course, this week's a big one for Jay Powell with his twice yearly congressional testimony. And it is that service sector inflation that's given him a right royal headache, isn't it?
That's right. So he's talking, testifying, I guess is the correct word, to the House and the Senate this week. And we'll give some indication of the things that he's talking about. We'll talk about payrolls in a little bit, but we do have some very interesting data to come before the next Fed meeting, which is in a couple of weeks' time. So we've got payrolls at the end of this week. We've got US inflation next week. So he can't be can't say exactly what he's going to do because he doesn't have all the data yet. There was an active debate amongst investors for their next meeting, which is the 22nd of March, whether or not they will hike by 25 basis points, which was the dead cert, to go back to Cheltenham, the dead cert a few weeks ago. But now it looks as though it's a little bit less likely, maybe 50 basis points is coming up on the rails, and that could be the one that wins it. But we'll have to see in terms of the inflation and the payroll data which way they go. Just quickly going back to Europe, I was talking about that their meeting is the week before, so it's on the 16th of March. The majority of investors think that they will hike by 50 basis points. So Europe will be hiking by 50 again and may well do so again because of that sticky core inflation. Europe at the minute looks as though they're a little bit behind the curve, more behind the curve than the Fed is, and they need to get their act in order and keep hiking pretty aggressively.
And in terms of how bringing that all that back now to markets and implications for investors, I mean, against that rising background of more hawkish rhetoric, we've got higher bond yields and bond yields rising across the curve. But I just wanted to focus in on your belief that about credit, because credit spreads haven't really moved. It's like credit investors are sort of just ignoring all the headlines that are going on.
Yeah, that's right. So there seems to be a split between investors and markets. So yeah, government bond yields have been going up, particularly the short end. And yeah, so 2-year yields going up a lot, maybe 10-year yields a little bit less. But that inversion, again, we've been talking about this for a while, that suggests that there's a high chance of a recession. So you need high interest rates now to get rid of that inflation. And then in the future, you'll cut because you've got a recession. So I'd say there's a quite a significant chance of a recession being priced into government bond yields. We run models, and just looking at the twos, tens, so that curve inversion is about 75% of the way to pricing in a recession. So that just in sort of broad terms. But when you look at how much credit spreads have widened, and they have widened over the last year or so, but maybe only 25% of the way to pricing in a recession. So they haven't got there yet. And I think one of the reasons that they haven't quite got there is because we have pushed back the time of a recession. The fact that Europe didn't run out of natural gas, very positive, avoided that big downside risk. China has reopened COVID. So a recession is likely. It's just not likely right now. It's maybe in the second half of the year. And if you're a credit investor, being underweight, giving up at that yield can hurt you. You know, at the minute, credit yields are quite high. And so giving up on that high yield is difficult. So I think that's what it is. The problem is, if you think you can time this recession call, you're going to have to be quite nimble and be able to sell before it occurs. What exactly are you looking for? I think we have been discussing this very actively, and you know, reducing credit risk seems to be a sensible move in terms of portfolio positioning, just to try and get ahead of that recession. But you don't want to be too underweight. That's the difficult balance.
I was just thinking there when you said about it, is it a function also of liquidity risk? You know, get the time, as you say, nimbleness between bond and credit markets. Could that have something to do with it too? I don't know.
That's fair, because if you want to try and add back the risk, if a recession doesn't happen, you want to add back credit risk, it'll be difficult because you won't be able to buy it. But that's the same about timing it, though. If you leave it too late and we hit a recession and you've got too much credit risk on, it's very hard to sell it as well. So it does lead potentially to a little bit more being stuck where you are, whereas in rates markets you probably can be a bit more nimble. I think that's right.
Tricky time. Always tricky times for investors, I suppose.
Yeah.
So look, let's just focus on the three things that we know are going to happen this week. Starting with China's two sessions. I mean, maybe Ben, just explain what actually it is for the benefit of the UK listeners and why it's so important this year.
Yeah, so it's the annual parliament in effect. So it's the governance meeting of the parliament. So we had at the end of last year the every 5 years, they shuffle the party. So that's the Chinese Communist Party. That was the party congress back in October. And then this is when they talk about who's in the cabinet, who's in the, in sort of, I guess, UK terms, who's in the parliament. What happens is they broadly announce targets for various different parts of China. So the economy, environment targets, energy targets. We're really focused on the economy because we're looking at investments that will tell us, you know, what sort of stimulus might be around the corner, and thinking particularly about the property sector, of course. So they've announced the target for GDP this year, which came in at 5%, which was a little bit lower than hoped for. I heard people talk about 5.5% or even 6%. And there was also announcement of some local government bond stimulus, which was a little bit lower than perhaps, again, I was hearing. So it doesn't sound as though there's going to be a massive stimulus around the corner. As we found out from, you know, looking at things after the party congress back in October, it can sound as if everything's the same. And then suddenly they announce a big policy change like they did back in November in terms of the end of zero COVID. So potentially there could be other stimulus coming, and they do have room. I mean, they've got inflation pretty under control. This week we've got inflation data out of China. It's probably going to be about 2%, and contrast that to what we're talking about with Europe, 5%. In the UK, headline inflation is 10%. 2% is perfectly all right. So they could stimulate a little bit more if they want. It's just, you know, that's just depends what the policymakers want to do.
But is that 5% actually achievable, though, in your view? You think, because what was it last year? It was
2.3%. It's roughly 3%. So, yeah, so it's it was, it, but that was in a year where you had COVID lockdowns, of course. So 5% is achievable.
But not enough to avoid a worldwide recession.
Yeah, that's true. So if there was a massive stimulus announced, so if you remember back in 2009, China just built huge amounts of infrastructure and sucked in lots of demand for things, capital goods and et cetera, from the rest of the world, which actually helped the rest of the world recover from the global financial crisis. Could they do something again here? It would take a massive, and they haven't announced it yet. So it sounds as though they're not going to do that. The 5% number would be much more of a domestic orientated, maybe like the service sector, more people go out to more restaurants, etc. So it would be good for China domestically, but it wouldn't have such a big positive impact on the globe.
Okay, great. Okay, well, look, let's go from China to the US, where, of course, we have some US payrolls, I think, at the end of this week, don't we? And last time, January's, I mean, over 500,000 bumper numbers. We're not expecting that again, are we?
No, I think there's been some funny data around the end of the year. So payrolls were a huge number of jobs, as you say. There were some very strong retail sales. I think there's difficulty with seasonal adjustments. So I think that payrolls will be a lot lower when they come out on Friday. Expectations are more like 200,000. Remember that if the US just was to keep its unemployment rate steady, they only need to create about 100,000 jobs every month, because that's sort of the number of people entering the job market. So any more than 100,000 is the job market getting tighter, and that means potentially higher wage inflation. So it needs to come down pretty aggressively for Jay Powell to get comfortable. If it goes down to 200,000, maybe he'll be comfortable enough to stick with this 25 basis point hike. If it's much higher than 200,000, 50 basis points is back on the cards, I would say.
Okay, so finally, it's bye-bye Bank of Japan governor, with Governor Kuroda leaving last time.
Final meeting. Yeah, it's his final meeting this week. So, yeah, he's presided over the aggressive yield curve control, keeping 10-year yields at 0.5%. Again, they've been lucky enough, I guess, skilled enough, such that inflation is under control. Although it's about 4%, so it's higher than in China, 2%. So I do think in the next couple of months, they're going to have to start increasing interest rates, tightening policy. Otherwise, they risk that inflation getting too high. And it is generally higher than expected over time. But yeah, I don't think he's going to do anything too crazy in his final meeting. I don't think the new governor and deputy governors, when they're installed, will want to rock the boat too seriously in their first couple of meetings either. So it's probably middle of this year, maybe later in this year, that we'll focus a little bit more back on Japan and the potential for some volatility there.
Okay, well, will you rock the boat with your number of the month, Ben? Tell us what it is and why.
Well, it's 0.6%, because what I was trying to think about is going back to the discussion we were having before between government bond yields and credit, and the fact that, you know, credit investors are reluctant to give up on their juicy yield. So the 0.6% is the difference between credit yields, so US investment grade credit index, I'm taking a Bloomberg index, which is yielding 5.5%. Now, you've got to sell that. What could you buy? You could buy 2-year treasury yields, which are yielding again at about 4.9%. So you're giving up 0.6% to go from investment grade credit to 2-year treasuries. But I would argue to go from something with credit risk, you know, potential downgrade, credit downgrade, default risk, and it's a much longer maturity index as well. So you've got all that uncertainty. To go down to something like a 2-year, so it's a very short maturity, you've got it's the US government, so they generally don't default, although I'm sure we'll have a chat about that in the next one, because there is a debt ceiling coming up.
But
you know, that's what happens when you have high yields, high Fed funds rates, high base rates, that all of a sudden you've got to be attracting, you've got to offer really big yields to attract new capital into that. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see more money leave credit, leave high yield credit, maybe even leave equities and head for the safety of that 4.9% for two-year treasuries, because you're only giving up that 0.6%.
Okay, that's interesting, isn't it? And that is your view, obviously, but it's an interesting view to hold. Ben, as always, great to talk to you. Good luck with the runners and riders if I don't speak to you again. And thanks for joining Market Talks, and thanks to you all for listening. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2022. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.